Yeah, that's what it is. That's Mr. Roger Miller. That is Saturday morning music right there. It struck me just yesterday. It is summertime. It's 90 degrees. Yeah, it's summertime. So in keeping with the season, which I sometimes do, I've got summertime music all queued up for a good part of the show. Not totally. I can't focus quite that much, but I've got reasonable number of summer cuts. And it started out with Mr. Roger Miller, of course, because is that not the penultimate summertime song? Well, we'll see. I've got others. And being summertime, of course, summertime begets the yard sale. I mean, we have yard sales all year long, but this is tis the season. This is when you're out early listening to Hot and Cold on the car radio and stopping at yard sales. I know what you're doing out there. Some of you anyway. Okay. I have been reluctant to share this with you, but we're all friends, right? And I am going to share with you one of the best things I have experienced in terms of yard sales and deals. And I honest to God, I sit here on Saturday morning at 8:08. I really had to think about, do I want to say this on the radio? Because a friend of mine is having a sale today. And this ain't a yard. He's calling it a yard sale, but this ain't no stinking yard sale. This is, if you listen to Hot and Cold, this is where you want to be this morning. My friend, now some of you are going to know this guy, my friend Matthew Strong, who is in technology, is having a yard sale. And Matthew has access to stuff in quantity that it just kind of knocks my socks off. It's in Washington Junction. If you know where Washington Junction is in Ellsworth, it started at 8:00. Now it's 8:09 and I'm serious. If you're looking for hardware, in particular, drill bits, drivers, stuff like that, he's got thousands of them. Photovoltaics. He's got he's got a lot of shipping cases. You know, the reinforced cases. Like if you let's say you're a roadie for a rock band, or you're moving delicate equipment. And I'm drawing a complete blank on the name of the cases. I should know this. I want to say it begins with a J. Anyway, he's got shipping cases you would not believe for stupid cheap. He's got shipping cases, I think they're for Abrams tanks, different things that would be used for Abrams tanks. I think those were aluminum. Some of them were plastic. If you are into the heat pump water heaters that we used to sell, the ones that were defective, he's got I think there's 60 units, and they're a couple $100 for 60 of them. Now, these don't work, but if you want spare parts, we got them. He's got a big warehouse. And as one who had a big warehouse, come to appreciate that you accumulated a lot of stuff. And I was there yesterday because I got the inside track, okay? And I exercised great restraint. There was a box of recip saw blades, 50 cents a blade. If you buy recip saw blades, you know how expensive they are. And I'm talking metal blades, long blades for demo, that had maybe gotten wet once and had a hint of rust here and there. Saw blades, carbide blades, metal cutting blades. Oh, my God. I could go on. Heavy equipment, air dryers, runs the range of stuff. anyway, it's at Washington Junction. I think it's going, I know it's going all day today. And there is stuff there. If you're into technology, if you're into into the stuff we talk about on Saturday mornings, you have to go. I'm going to tell you. You probably will not be disappointed. I don't know if you remember when we used to do the Home Depot thing, and I used to say, "Well, you know, this is a good sale. This is a good sale." And a lot of the drill bits are titanium bits. He's got a jackhammer thing. This is all new stuff. This is not used stuff. Jackhammer different bits and stuff. Big hole saws that where you'd be cutting through concrete or asphalt or something like that, you know, 3-inch diameter or so. Amazing stuff. And multiples, not just one. So if you're into that kind of thing or you have a business, if you need drill bits or drivers, I almost wet my pants when I saw all the drill bits. They were all sorted out, too. It wasn't just like a big box and you got to sort. They were sorted out by size. So anyway, Washington Junction, if you know where Washington Junction is, go there, you'll see a sign that says the Junction. If you've been around as long as I have, you know it's the old Thorson Machinery building. It's a blue building. As you're headed east, it'll be on your left side. And you'll see the stuff in the parking lot. So I've known Matthew for years, like 30 years. And he used to get in a lot of surplus stuff. And it would be all in the parking lot. And he always let me know when a truck had come in of surplus stuff that he would deal with. And I would go there and just walk around drooling. and batteries, 12-volt deep cycle new batteries. If anybody's talked to me about an off-the-grid system, needed batteries, 12-volt lead acid deep cycle batteries, they are there. I saw them yesterday. They're impressive and they're very affordable. If you've shopped deep cycle batteries, you got to be there. I'm serious. So anyway, how's that? I really debated whether I should say this on the radio because I just want to keep it all for myself and I can't. I'm not going to use all the drill bits. I'm not going to use all the cases. And we're talking crazy deals. We really are. He just wants the stuff out of his warehouse. Offers are accepted. If you're, you know, especially if you're buying in volume in big, you're doing volume in, you say, I'll take all of those. How much? Make him an offer. And here I am here. And what am I doing? I'm sitting here in a radio station in Bangor. I'm not in Ellsworth. Or I should be, but I was there yesterday, and you know, I only have limited funds, so hence my sharing with you this Saturday morning. All right, we got to take a break. It's 8:15. It's hot and cold. It's Saturday morning. You knew all that. We'll be back. Don't go nowhere. More to come. Okay, we're back. It's 8:19. It's hot and cold. It's Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. I just was. I'll mention it one more time, and maybe I'm trying. I just trying to remember the name of those shipping cases. They were, and it's just, I've just completely blanked out on it, and I'm kind of embarrassed. But if you're looking for a yard sale that isn't just old clothes. Washington Junction, Ellsworth, Maine. It's called the Technology Junction. Big sign says Junction. You can't miss it. I always think Petticoat, as I get there, Petticoat Junction always goes through my head. But that's me. I'm dated. What can I tell you? Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text line is 601-207-4478. Thus far, no texts have shown up. So there. How about that? We've been slowly catching up on stuff at our shop. We actually got another car out for sale. It's just like been pulling teeth, but we have a number that are coming together. So we are making progress, which is a good thing because there's more coming in and we need to keep them from piling up. I don't collect them. I'm not a collector. No, I'm not. Although I have to admit, I have been into the storage in the shop getting parts lately and actually finding the right parts. It's been kind of nice. That has sort of worked out in that it's in between working on cars, I am getting the shop cleaned up and more organized than it was. I want to mention also, being as I'm giving plugs this morning, it seems, there's a place in Searsport that opened up called the Lobster Rail, and it's run by Massimo Rani, who has Massimo's restaurant, had Massimo's restaurant in Bangor. He is down in Searsport now, at least for the summer. And he in the evenings, Friday and Saturday, he has Italian food in Searsport, Maine. Hot diggity dog. So, great guy, wonderful character. He's Italian. What more do I need to tell you? Anyway, so that opened kind of officially this week, so that's kind of cool. If you're into lobster rolls, he's got them with some with his chef spin to them. A little different, some different, some traditional. So, and I also want to put a plug out to my friend Sam, who brought me a banjo this week. It was his banjo. It was an old K banjo. It was really nice shape, and it's nothing that I needed as a collector or as a player. Although it does play nice, it's a neck is a little narrow for my big paws. But in Searsport, Maine, we are starting at the library a musical instrument lending library. So I've kind of gone through it and spiffed it up a little bit, tweaked it, got a really nice sound out of it. It's going to head over to the library. My wife said to me last night, "How long is that banjo going to be here?" We've hit the saturation point on banjos at my house, and I said, "Well, I actually was going to go with a friend. He had a guitar he was going to bring over, and we both were busy, so I will get it over to the lending library, and I think this will probably be their first banjo." And Sam, really appreciate it. It's a kind gesture, and we'll put it to a good use, and I think there might be a tax credit available. The library will send that out. You know, when you donate things to libraries like books and stuff, you get, it's kind of like donating to Goodwill or Salvation Army. There are tax credits that you can take. That's kind of nice. It makes it all worthwhile and work on both ends of things. So I'm kind of happy about that. Our phone number again, 1-800-966-1039. Text line is 601-207-4478. That's all I got. I just have been so excited about the big yard sale that and I was all week planning on getting there, and I finally said, you know, I got to go today, which was yesterday, Friday, just to scope things out. And they were setting up. I was there last weekend, I guess, and they were setting up last weekend. And I mean, we're talking big time stuff. So, and did I say photovoltaics? And reluctant to tell you about the photovoltaics, but there are photovoltaics there as well. So, and that's all I got. I've been looking at tractors all week, and we'll talk about that in a bit after we take this phone call. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yes. I need your advice, all-seeing, all-knowing one. We've discussed before ventilation, heat loss in roofs, and I've got one coming up that'll be replacing asphalt. They have a pellet stove pipe, and it dispenses a lot of heat in that attic. And I was curious. I did part of the roof last year and added some fiberglass, and they said it tremendously helped. Mm. What I was considering was, when I do these other two sides of this hip, was to cut an access hole in and inspect the area and just pack the rest of that with cellulose. Would you recommend that?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with cellulose. If you've got a chimney, though, going up through, even though it's a pellet stove chimney, you do need to have a clearance around that. Technically,
self-protective?
Technically, Cellulose, I would consider combustible material, although it's really not supposed to be. But just a collar around that pipe to hold it back at least 2 inches would be fine, and you could make that out of flashing if you had to.
So actually, just some metal coil stock for fascia or something of that.
Yeah.
Some alcohol or aluminum or something to that effect.
Yeah.
And what is the clearance again?
I believe it. Well, you'd have to check on the pipe, but I'm going to say it's 2 inches.
Okay. And cellulose is fine, or should I just, if I'm going to get in there, can I just would fiberglass? Or?
I would be using cellulose just because it's a better insulation. If you already got some fiberglass there, you can set it on top of the fiberglass because it's not considered combustible, hold back the cellulose, and I think you'd be in fine shape.
Do you remember when Home Depot was running a deal where if you bought 10 bags, you got the machine for free?
I believe they still do that.
They do?
Yeah, I'd just give a call just to double check before you went in there and got it. But I'm pretty certain they'll loan you the machine if you get 10 bags.
Okay. Hey, thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye-bye. Let's see. Our text number is 601-207-4478. Of course, the phone is 1-800-966-1039 if you'd like to give a call. I've been, I think I mentioned last week, we occasionally now, well, we've always had to move tanks or things. You know, we manufacture tanks, we manufacture heat exchangers, and we have to ship them. And I don't have a forklift since we've moved, because the forklift we had would not operate on a gravel driveway, which is what we presently have. So we've been going through we are busy making tanks and heat exchangers in our spare time just because we have no forklift to load the truck. So we've got these oddball things that we have to do to get the product into the truck. And the trucking company we want to use doesn't normally have a lift gate available. That doesn't necessarily help us get the thing from the shop to the lift gate anyway, although we found that our pallet jack will work on the driveway right now while everything is bone dry. I've been looking around for a forklift to drive on gravel or maybe a tractor. A compact tractor that we could put forks on. And if I thought forklifts were expensive, compact tractors are even more expensive. And more expensive in the state of Maine just because I guess it's everybody wants a compact tractor. If you look other places, other parts of the country, they're actually less expensive. I think supply and demand really mandates what the pricing is. So I've been looking around. And you know, as a guy, I want to dig holes. I don't want to move gravel around. So, you know, why not? Let's see. So the search continues, I have not explained to my wife too much about the whole tractor thing because I don't think she's going to understand. Go figure, right? Go figure. We got to take a break. It is 8:29 here. It's 8:30. Oh, my goodness. Oh, we're so running so on time. It's amazing. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Si, senor. It's hot and cold. Calor y frio. It's Saturday. Sabado, domingo. I don't know. Anyway, I took Spanish in high school, and it really paid off. It's hot and cold. It's Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text line is 601-207-4478. I want to tell you about my friend Alan at General Appliance and Brewer. I had the occasion to give his number to somebody who had a question about appliances this week. I said, do you know Alan? You 989-4340. Just remember that number, 989-4341. Honest to God, I said that, and hopefully they took my advice. It was easy to do, and it was a refrigerator problem. I wasn't sure if it needed a refrigerator or not. I said, call because we've got electronics and refrigerators, and you never know. But they're on Center Street in Brewer, open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. General Appliance will supply you with parts, service, whatever you need, including occasionally refurbished appliances which do not last long there. And they also, of course, they have gas appliances of every way, shape, and form, and they service them as well. 989-4341 is that number that I gave out that I remembered, even though I wasn't here in the studio, because the number's not written down anywhere in this studio. It's up here. I'm going like this to my head. That's about the – it's kind of echoey like that, too. Can you hear that? That's – yeah. Anyway, give them a call, 989-4341. But now it's time to give me a call at 1-800-966-1039. I should turn down the music there. There we go. Thank you. The phone number again, 1-800-966-1039. We got a text also, 601-207-4478 is the text line. Hello? You're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Good morning.
Good morning. During that heat wave, I wanted to put some thicker oil in my automobile engine. And I got to tell you, it was pretty darn confusing. I finally found a very heavy grade of oil to mix with my regular oil. It made a difference, but I'll tell you, it's confusing. But I did get the thickest one, and I don't know if you know the numbers on that, but I think it was 20-something. It's the first number that is the thickness.
Mm.
It's not the second number. So you think you could go over and give us a little primer on that?
Probably not, to be honest. I had a friend who was a metallurgist who many times was called to answer questions about lubrication for metal surfaces and had done a very in-depth study of it. I tell you this, I don't mess with oil other than using whatever it says to use. If in the manual it says I could use a higher viscosity oil in the summertime, I would consider it, considering the weather we've had. But generally, I think it's more important. I'll give you an example. The Priuses that we run, the second generation Prius at least, 04 to 09, use a 5W20, and that's all I use is 5W20. And I think the more important factor is just to keep the oil changed regularly, especially this time of year, and of course to keep an eye on it because it's so critical that it's maintained. Viscosity breaks down, oil breaks down, unless it's a synthetic. And the newer generation Prius, which is 2010 and newer, just uses a straight synthetic, and I'm gonna be lying if I tell you I think it's a 0W30 synthetic, which is a pretty unviscous, low viscosity of oil. I'm not necessarily, unless it's prescribed by the manufacturer, I'm not a big fan of using synthetics. I would rather use a conventional oil and just change every 3,000 miles. I think really the frequency of changing the oil and just looking at the oil is really important. I don't think you need to get exotic and send your oil out for testing or anything like that unless the car uses 20 gallons of oil at a time. There are some cars that hold a lot of capacity, and that maybe makes it worthwhile to test the oil and not change it regularly, but I don't think so. Oil is cheap compared to replacing. I mean, if you have a car that has a really big oil capacity, it's probably a really expensive car. I'd be inclined to protect my investment. If you could spend the money to buy an expensive car, holds a lot of oil, you probably should be well prepared to spend money on oil and change it with some regularity. I hope that helps. I'm sorry, I'm not as versed as I would like to be, other than I just do what they tell me to do. Speaking of which, on the topic, some cars, we deal with used cars. Some cars will use more oil than others. If you look in any pretty much any owner's manual, assuming the car was new, you got it, you just bought it, it's brand new, and you look in that manual somewhere where it tells you about oil, it says the manufacturer considers it normal to use a quart every 500 miles. Well, I don't consider it normal. I think most mechanics, and I don't consider myself a mechanic as such, don't consider that normal. That's, as a lawyer friend put it once, that's weasel language put in by a lawyer to cover the car manufacturer. And if, in fact, the car does consume oil like that, it's not the end of the world, except for the fact that you need to keep an eye on things. So for what that, I hope that's helpful. Got a text message here. V76 oil Burnham boiler, maximum firing rate on tag is 2 gallons per hour. Has a Beckett burner with 1.5 gallons per hour. Can I downsize? I think they say on the nameplate what you can downsize to. I'm not positive about that. Further says I don't need full capacity of the boiler. I really would ask a when you're having the boiler cleaned, what the technician would suggest. It usually will tell you on the nameplate. Technician will have the experience, though I don't have. I don't work on oil boilers on a daily basis. I do know at some point you're going to hit a point where you shouldn't go too low. If it's 2 gallon per hour, I think you're maybe can downsize a little bit, but how much, I don't know. There's things we can play with to make that behave properly, but I'm not going to make the recommendation because I don't have the background on that. I'm sorry, but your technician will. Our phone number again, 1-800-966-1039 to text 601-207-4478. And I remembered, and this is important, if in fact it's something you need, I mentioned beginning of the hour, my friend Matthew Strong down in Ellsworth at Washington Junction is having a huge sale today of technology stuff. And I remembered the name of the shipping cases. These are Pelican cases. And these are very strong. The kind of thing, you know, you drop off a building and you've got delicate equipment and it comes out intact. He's got more Pelican cases than he knows what to do with. I mean, and they're all new. So for what it's worth, you could buy one. You could buy probably 20 of them. I know there's more than 20 there. He makes me feel like I'm an amateur. Back to the phones we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
I enjoy your show when I can catch it. Thanks. We are in the process of building a house down here on the coast, and was having some conversation about the basement. We're putting in a full basement, mm-hmm. And I know I'd like to eventually put a couple of inches of foam on the inside walls. We're thinking about putting a couple rooms in down there by and by,
yep.
Provided it ends up being dry and whatnot. Mm. The piece that I was debating about, and I kind of course have to decide before we put the foundation in, is the benefit of putting foam underneath the foundation floor. Mm. Whether it's worth the cost, whether it's just as useful to put foam on the floor after it's laid down the road. Was curious about your thoughts on all that.
Good question. Is the floor going to be a radiant slab or just a regular floor?
Just a regular basement floor.
Okay. I think it becomes a little less critical to insulate. You know, usually we're insulating a floor for a couple reasons. The major reason, of course, is to keep it from heaving from frost. It's not going to heave if it's down in the basement floor. It's down, you know, 4, 6, 8 feet, whatever it is, below grade. With a building on top of it. The other reason that I like to have foam underneath the floor is to segregate the floor from the groundwater. A vapor barrier can do that. Foam becomes a little bit more of a physical barrier in that you're a couple of inches separate from what could be a wet substrate. In going on the inside of the room, you eliminate that problem completely because so you put your concrete slab down, you put a vapor barrier underneath it, which you really have to do, pour the slab. Then if you say, okay, you know what, I want to make this living space, if you now put foam on the room side, you've accomplished a couple things. You've still physically separated the slab from living space and keeping moisture away. I would put a vapor barrier on top of the concrete, put foam on top, and then deck over that. And you can use pressure-treated sleepers, or you could use tongue-and-groove decking directly over the foam with no sleepers. Depends what the use of the room is going to be. But you get a little bit of resiliency because now it's essentially a wooden floor, and you're not right on concrete. It's also going to be warmer because it is you're not on concrete, which is conductive.
Right.
And it will make a difference. So I would lobby for putting it on the room side.
Okay.
And it'll save you the cost initially, but the vapor barrier is critical for underneath the slab.
Yeah.
You definitely should do.
Definitely going to do vapor barrier under the slab. I was just debating about whether I needed to do the foam. And yeah, thank you for your insight on that.
Okay. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. And you know, we're toying with the idea of another building, and been chewing over the idea of a building on a slab with a crawl space. And the crawl space is there for mechanicals. And the question is, okay, the slab is there really just to anchor the building to the ground. And my friend, I have a friend, Jim, who's a code guy down in Southern Maine. He doesn't want me to build on a slab. He wants me to build on posts. And I said, you know, I understand what you're saying. It's quicker. It's cheaper. You could do it. But I still have this concern about the value, the financial value to your property of being on post versus being on a slab. Even though what I'm considering is a concrete slab with a pressure-treated wooden frost wall, excuse me, that's insulated with foam, but it gives me a crawl space that I can get into. I can run mechanicals. If I need to retrofit mechanicals, I can get in there. You can certainly do that on posts as well. But inevitably, at some point, if you build on posts, somebody wants to close it in. Okay, so you're closing it in now. How much structure are you going to put in place to make walls to close in the perimeter, because people don't normally want to look at posts? And we're starting to get closer and closer to just doing a concrete slab and a pressure-treated frost wall. So I'm not sure that there's a economic advantage. I think there is an appraisal value advantage to having a concrete foundation, albeit a simple foundation. And so, but the question is, and this has become kind of hypothetical and kind of a code guy question as well. Do we insulate that slab? I guess the short answer is, yeah, probably we do. Because it's technically a floating slab. It's not going to be a frost wall building. We're not putting a frost wall down and a slab inside of it. We're just putting a floating slab. Floating slab kind of needs insulation, it depends on the soils. I think if I did this, the code guy is going to make me do it anyway. So we'll see. I'll keep you posted on that if and when the project happens and how it goes together. And so then the other part of it is I'm probably not going to frame it up, although I'm tempted to because I like the idea of playing with wood. But I also appreciate the fact that I'm really kind of busy and I'm not as young as I once was, so I'm not as fast as I was. And I could probably have a contractor bang out the building in a couple of days, at least the shell, and then I could do any parts I want to do. The The thought was, though, if you're doing a pressure-treated frost wall that's, what, maybe 2.5 feet tall, maybe we should balloon frame it with pressure-treated, do the whole – it's not a big space. We'll do the whole space with pressure-treated lumber and do a balloon frame it, and then put a ledger board around, put a floor deck on top of it, be off and running. And the luxury of doing it initially without putting the floor deck in is very easy to insulate with foam at that point, cut and fit foam, and make it a fairly simple structure to insulate. And then the question is, how do we insulate? If I'm doing it myself or maybe having a contractor do it, we frame it with 2x4s, put 3.5 inches of foam in a 2x4 cavity, which is, I don't know, our 24, maybe 22, something like that. But it's foam. And then a layer of maybe 1.5 inches on top of that. So we're up to about 5 inches of foam, which gets us up to a pretty tight building. And either that goes outside or inside. And I'm still kind of chewing that one over too. But we'll if we get to the point, I think we will. We'll give you a full rundown as we go through it. Seems like we ought to be doing a TV show on it. I don't know. A whole TV show thing, right? Back to the phones we go. Line one, good morning. We missed it. I'm sorry. I was looking at the other direction. I was watching for text, and there's the phone ringing. Sorry. Call back at 1-800-966-1039. There we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Morning, Tom. How are you?
Good. How are you, Tom?
Good. Yeah, I just want to go back to this engine oil consumption thing.
Motors.
I did a lot of Mercedes engine rebuilding back in the 70s and the 80s. Mm. And my rule of thumb was, you know, there was an initial break-in period. You might use a little bit of oil until things all kind of seeded in. Mm. But it was very disconcerting, you know, when I'd have someone that, say, bought a brand-new Mercedes and come in for service, and I'd say, well, you're down about a quart of oil. And they'd look at me in amazement because here they are, you know, spend $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 for a car back in those days and not expect any oil consumption. I'd have to open up the owner's manual and, you know, you use the term weasel language. And even Mercedes tended to have that also.
Yeah.
Because in their book, they said that normal oil consumption for at least the first, no, 3 to 6,000 miles or so was a quart every 750 miles.
Mm.
And I'd explain to them, I said, you know, if and when the time comes that I rebuild an engine for you, you know, and if I put something together and it uses a quart of oil in 750 miles, something isn't right.
Yeah.
You know, you should get better oil mileage than that. But like you said, they put it in there just to weigh the odds against the lawsuits and, you know, situations and just the, it's a CYA. Situation, basically. You know? So, but you know, like I said, you know, anything that I've ever rebuilt, I did a lot of MG and Triumph and motorcycle stuff and everything else. And, you know, if you've got what seems excessive oil consumption, you can almost bet either someone's really hammering on that vehicle really hard or, you know, something's not right when it went together.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But those were my standards anyway. Maybe okay. A little bit tighter than Mercedes was, but, you know, everybody's got to have an out, right?
That's right. Okay.
Have a good day.
Thanks, Tom. See ya.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. And we're going to take a break. It's 8:55 here at the Voice of Maine. When we come back, we'll take calls and texts. That's what we'll do. And I told you, Massimo, the Italian guys, and this goes through my head every time I go by.
All right. We're back. It's 9:07. It's hot and cold. It's Saturday morning. You knew all that stuff. I'm not telling you nothing new. Let's see. Turn down Mr. Paul Simon, and I will tell you the phone number. 1-800-966-1039 is the number to call in this morning. The text line, 601-207-4478, if you're looking for the text line. 601-207-4478. Yes, I said that. I'm repeating myself. It's Saturday morning. I have 2 hours to cover the same basic things. So I hope that made sense, didn't it?
And let's see. I mentioned it last hour. I'll mention it again because my friend Matthew Strong is having a huge technology yard sale, which you could read for anybody who has mechanical or home improvement interests or technological interests. You need to be there. If you use drills, if you use nut drivers, power screwdrivers, use saws, use jackhammers. He's got jackhammer bits. Who has new jackhammer built bits in quantity? He had a shop. I was there earlier in the week. He had a shopping cart full of power tools. A shopping cart full of power tools. Now, come on. This is my kind of guy, which is why we're friends. And I honestly, I said it last hour. I'll say it again. I had serious ethical conversation with myself. Do I want to mention all this on the radio? Just because I don't want all this stuff to be gone. But then again, he wants it all gone. So anyway, he's in Washington Junction in Ellsworth. And the big sign says the Junction. So I think it says Technology Junction. And it is, if no other time, it is today. So you want to swing over there. It's going to be all day. Started at 8 o'clock, and it's going to all be gone. And I'm going to be chagrined. But I'll go to the phones, and I'll talk. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
I listen to your show all the time, but I guess I haven't been paying too close enough attention.
Okay.
What are foldable tags?
Photovoltaics are solar electric panels. They make electricity if you put them in the sun.
Cool.
That was easy, huh?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah.
That guy's got them down in Ellsworth?
He does. He had. He had a lot there, so there's probably still some. It's still right. It's only 9:10. He only started at 8. He had multiple stacks of them.
Right.
So it's worth a trip if you're interested.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right, you're welcome.
Appreciate
bye-bye.
It.
Okay. And I will tell you, the panels that are there are from a company that went out of business. And you have to read between the lines, and I do all the time, especially if he comes up with something like this. Company was called 10K, T-E-N, big letter K. And they went out of business. They got in gobs of venture capital money and tried to do a lot of innovative things. And I think some were successful, some were not. But they had a problem with, they were using microinverters, and moisture got into some microinverters, and they just kind of pulled the plug on the whole company because of this problem. And so I'm reading between the lines here, and maybe I'm wrong, but my read on the whole thing was, okay, we got $24 million in venture capital. We screwed around for a while. We made really good money, and I'm done. It's okay. You know, it was your venture capital. Venture capital is tough. I'm done. Okay. And so what happened was these panels are now available. Now, some of them are new. Some of them are used. Some of them are damaged. And the unique way these things were made, the damaged panels still work. And now the photovoltaic panel, solar electric panel, is a silicon chip mounted to glass. And if you break the panel, the tempered glass fractures. But the panel usually still works, which is kind of interesting. I want to tell you, the broken panels are stupid, stupid, stupid. I think they're pennies on the watt. Now, a usual panel is about a 90 cents a watt for a new panel. If you're looking for a really cheap day, if you want to just experiment or something, they're still intact because there's plastics that hold it all together. And he had one set up the other day that was, working. It was broken. And all the, so he got all the, they did a, there's a video if you go to YouTube. Let me see if I, it's TENK Solar. Let's see what we got. Okay, so the videos are there. And the one they have is, they have one called a reliability. I don't know, maybe that's not the one, but yeah, here it is. The conventional solar can't do it. And if you click on the video, they throw the kitchen sink at the panel. Oh, here it is. The guy is took a big pry bar and smashed it through the panel, and the output of the panel stayed the same. So it's a little bit different construction. Anyway, they're there. Okay, boy, is he paying for this? I just say, again, if you're looking for stuff, this is a one shot deal. Today's the only day he's doing this, and it's worth the trip because there's a lot of cool stuff. I went yesterday, and I brought my daughter with me to try to keep me under control, and I didn't stay long. I said, you stay much longer, you're going to start spending way too much money. And I don't have, and the money is an issue, but the space is the bigger issue for me right now. And I'm frustrated by that. But anyway. All right. So let's go back to the, we'll give out the phone number. We can talk about other things. 1-800-966-1039 is the phone number. The text line 601-207-4478. So the text, and now we're going to create a monster doing this. Okay. I'm going to read this text message. Okay. And the text message is, does Pete have any interest in doing the radio show when you finally retire? I believe he does. He's telling me he wants to talk to the management of the station. He wants his own show. And I'm not sure we're ready to unleash Pete onto the world with his own radio program. But he is my son, and he is a character. So that's and he's taking some time off this week. He's taking a couple days off this week. So Monday, Tuesday, it's like on vacation. So and here's the problem. Pete taking a couple days off has inspired my wife to suggest to me that we should take a couple of days off, or I should take a couple of days off, and she and I would go somewhere, like on a vacation type thing. And, okay. but I'm not sure where I would go. So I'll mull that one over during the break, because I got to take a break here. It is already time for that. When we come back, we'll take your calls at 1-800-966-1039. The text line is 601-207-4478. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. It's 9:20. It's hot and cold. It's Saturday morning. You knew all that, and you're still here. it's good to be here on Saturday morning, I tell you what. Let's see. No text messages. 601-207-4478. Text line. The phone line, 1-800-966-1039. If you'd like to give a call, and I think we'll hear from Pete if he's not busy at some point this morning. You can ask anything you'd like in the interim, I suppose, just because the phones aren't going. They were a minute ago when we were not on the – when we were taking our break. But now that we're back, we got nothing. So one thing I did want to mention is that – We dropped the price on our ambulance because we want to have it go. And I would hate to see it go, but and here's the thing. We were digging around in it the other day, Pete was, and he found a 110-volt inverter and a charger for the batteries, because it's a diesel vehicle. It actually has two batteries because it has a lot of electronic stuff running. And so it's got a built-in inverter and charger, which is pretty impressive. And we moved it out front so folks don't miss the fact that we have an ambulance. The other big news of the week, speaking of putting things out front, reminded me, we finally put up a mailbox. We have been, been there 2 months now. June 1st to August 1st, is that like 2 months? Yeah. Well, the month of June, that's 2 months, 60 days. So finally, for August 1st, we got the mailbox up. And we decided to put the post in a bucket and put concrete in the bucket. And we were going to dig a post hole, and Pete and I went out there with the post hole digger and realized that we ain't digging in this stuff. This is really compacted. So we took the path of least resistance. I'm not sure if we mixed the concrete right or not, but it did finally set. It took a while, and I let him do the post. And, the woodwork that holds the mailbox. And we realized that serendipity smiled upon us upon finishing this project, in that we have tractor trailers come in. I mentioned, we ship out tanks as we manufacture them. So the tractor trailer guy comes in, and that mailbox would be right in the way if that post was set in the ground. I would guarantee the tractor trailer guy would run over it with great regularity. We have the luxury of sliding the thing around if we have to. So I guess that's a good thing. Well, let's see. We got a couple of text messages just came in. First one, if you were building a house today, what would you use for a heating system and how would you insulate? Good question. I would insulate with foam. No equivocation there. I would probably use sheet foam just because it's less expensive. I would use spray foam if I wanted it done real fast and I had the money. And I would heat it with a heat pump. I would heat it with a heat pump because we could put a photovoltaic system and a solar electric system and bank that energy with utility and come out of it basically with no utility bills. And if the building is insulated well enough, I think a heat pump can handle that. I might consider having a wood stove just in case power goes out. It's always nice to have that backup system in place. And after living through the ice storm and trying to talk people through surviving back in 1998, was it, during the ice storm where they had no wood stove, the wood stove is a cheap date. What else? That's pretty much it. I mean, we could spend the rest of the show talking about how to insulate, and what one would do. But I know the other thing I want to mention about heat pumps. I guess the governor signed a bill where the goal, and I don't remember the actual date, but there's a goal for the state of Maine to get 100,000 heat pumps installed. I think that's a laudable goal. I think it's a doable goal, and I think it's a valuable one for the whole state. So, I have a text message here. It says, have you found your sign? It's like, where's Waldo? Yes, Nat, I found my sign. It's in the back seat of my car. And it will show up someplace where you will not expect it. So you be aware. That's all I'm saying, Nat. My friend Nat thinks he's gonna one-up me. Ain't happening. We had a sign out front of our old building, and Pete took it down and put it in front of Nat's shop. And Nat put it somewhere else. And I was alerted almost immediately. And it's going to show up sometime, Nat. And it's going to be, okay. Two can play this game. It's an ongoing, things happen. Smart guy. As long as Nat is listening, Nat, I tried to send you a text message this morning. I can't being in the building here, but there's a lot of stuff that you would be interested in at this technology yard sale in Ellsworth in Washington Junction, which I realize you live near there, and now you're not you're in probably in Searsport. Maybe you're not. If you're still home, head over to Washington Junction. I think specifically there's equipment there you may be interested in. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Have I found my site? I'm always taken aback when people I know send me text messages that are not relevant to the radio program. there's a lot that goes with that story that I won't waste time on right now. 1-800-966-1039 is the phone number. Text line is 601-207-4478. If I go back to the prior text message, which is a little more relevant, I can discuss with you, being as we have no phone calls, what I would consider in terms of insulating. There's a lot of folks in the area, in the state, in the country, in the world for that matter, in Europe in particular, who are working on what they call passive houses or net zero energy houses. And there's a wide variety of ways that this can work. A net zero house basically is maybe a conventionally constructed house that has enough solar electric panels on the roof to compensate for the fact that it uses energy over the course of a year and throws that burden back on the utility to supply power during times when there's not enough solar power. And that works. I don't think that's necessarily the most practical approach or realistic approach because we are, as people who would be maybe generating solar electricity on our property this time of year, wanting to bank that energy with the utility, if we want to be reasonable about this, we make the usage of energy as low as possible so we're not putting too much of a burden on the utility, because this is going to come back and bite us if we're not acknowledging the fact that the utility is offering or giving us a service, which is banking energy for us for later use. So rather than just build a house that's an energy hog, we build a house that's very efficient. All those things become smaller, and you spend less money, perhaps, in terms of energy. And the passive house concept doesn't necessarily use any excess any power to power it. It banks on the fact that the building pretty much can carry itself just by being there. It's getting passive solar gain, and I'm not sure that's quite an accurate representation, but that's the goal they go for, and it kind of acknowledges the fact that you have to accept big temperature swings within the house, and I'm not sure. I don't want to accept that. I don't think that's realistic. But I tell you what, let's take a break and go to the phone, and we'll come back to the conversation. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi, Tom. I have a question about my do-it-yourself solar hot water system.
Sure.
I have one of your tanks in my basement, and during the summer, we make hot water from the sun with it.
Mm-hmm.
I've been using just a regular off-the-shelf taco pump, and I think that because it's a drain-back system, I get a lot of corrosion,
yep.
And I've had to replace the pump once.
Yep.
So I'm wondering what other sort of pump should I look for to circulate in a drain-back system?
What size pump are you using now? What's the model?
007.
Oh, okay.
And I actually find that it doesn't quite, it struggles with the, 10 feet ahead that when it has to start up in the morning,
yep.
and everything's empty and it has to totally fill up that collector. Yep.
Okay. I got a cheap date for you that might work, might be the operative word here. If you get on eBay, you put in a plastic pump, or solar, put in 12-volt or 24-volt plastic pump. There's a number of little Chinese pumps that are probably most would be $50.
Okay.
They're going to operate off of DC voltage instead of AC, but they are much higher.
They have some 24-volt battery bank here.
Okay. They have a pretty high head capacity, like 30 feet, some of them. I think that would work fine. I've had mixed results. Some have worked great. Some have been horrible. And it's sort of consistent with buying stuff from China. But and I don't remember which vendor. I guess I would look at the feedback for the vendors to see if people are having problem with the pumps. I've had some that have worked beautifully, but I think something that is probably a little bit stronger than a 007 is around $20.
Wow.
And yeah. It's plastic, so it doesn't corrode.
Okay, good. So going to a stainless steel taco for like $300 is not the first thing I'm going to try.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it.
Good.
Give it a go. If you have a problem, call me during the week. I'll get you through it.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Tom.
Thanks. Bye bye. Yeah, it's sort of my pet project. I've got about five I'm going to put in my heating system to test this winter, see how we make out. But speaking of that, we got to take a break right now. Let's go there. Okay, we'll be right back. It's Hot and Cold. Stay with us. Okay, we're back. It's 9:39. It's the Hot and Cold radio program, and I just want to tell you that this song is this next guy's favorite song in the whole world. That's Pete. Hey, Pete, how you doing?
Good morning, Maine. How's everyone doing today? That is not my favorite song in the world. It's an okay song at best. It's a middling song.
Pete, somebody texted me, wants to know if you would fill in for me if I went away.
What, went away like died? Because I'm just going to sell everything and then move out of state. No, yeah, absolutely. I was just thinking I should have my own show. We call it Coast to Coast Like Butter and Toast with Pete Gosey.
Well, I think somebody already has Coast to Coast, so you can't use that.
Yeah, but if you throw like butter and toast on the end, okay. That makes it slick.
All right, so what's going on, Pete?
Well, I went to the post office. I put a sign up, I closed the business, went to the post office, and my cologne has come in, so I smell pretty good today.
Wow.
Then I stopped at a yard sale on the way back.
Am I paying for this?
I was at that yard sale for less than 60 seconds.
Okay.
When was the last time anybody found anything that they wanted at a yard sale? I don't think I've bought anything from a yard sale in like 10 years.
Matthew's yard sale.
Yeah, you're the exception that proves the rule. But so as far as like work things, I got a gentleman coming in. He's going to take a look at the Lycan Green 2008 Prius.
Okay.
He called first thing this morning. Mm-hmm. And for those of you not keeping up to date with our Facebook page, which you should, yesterday we put out a 2011 third-gen Prius. It's black, got 155K on it. 6395. Last one we put out, it was the same price. The only difference was it was white, sort of a little bit more of a pearlescent white. We had a line of people fighting over it, and that's not shtick either. It was literally person after person after person wanted it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was strange.
Like five or six people deep that wanted that car. And this is basically the same car, it's black instead of white. So get a move on. I got nothing to do and I smell great.
Yeah, I will say, he's a sweet smelling boy, that Pete.
What are you even doing? What's going on there?
What's going on here? Not much. I just been I've been pimping Matthew's yard sale all morning because, I mean, if you use stuff like I do, drill bits and stuff, it's kind of crazy not to be there.
Yeah,
but
he does have a good deal on recip saw blades.
Oh my God! Don't get me started.
I've been hearing about these blades all week.
I came back with more yesterday too. I'd gone on last weekend and grabbed some, and oh my God! And then the circular saw blades were out yesterday.
I think we've got enough green bananas at this point, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
So, what kind of questions have you been getting today? What can I answer for people? How can I help people know better?
Well, somebody wanted to know about downsizing the burner nozzle on a V76 Burnham boiler.
I can't help on that one. Okay. I don't know anything about that. I could tap dance around the question and say that's a great question for Tom and pass it on to you.
Yeah, that happens a lot. Well, I'll answer the phone. You go do something, and then the next thing I know, you're coming out. Well, it's for you. So that works.
You encourage. You encourage problem solving.
Oh, that's what I am, a problem solver. Yeah.
You're very good at critical thinking.
Yeah, so your mother thinks I should take her on vacation now because you're taking a couple days off.
I'm inclined to agree. I think everybody should just take a few days off. Yeah. Why not?
I want to go someplace where there is a heated swimming pool, and I just want to sit there and go in the pool, get out of the pool for a little while, and then go back in the pool again. That's for me, that's...
I want to go where the people are, where everyone knows your name. I messed it up. I haven't seen Cheers in a long time.
Yeah. There was a, which reminds me, there was a house we were interested in a few years ago, and it was near a tavern. And I thought, and I don't drink, but I thought, you know, it was a walk, like 500 feet. I thought, you know, if I wanted to start drinking, I could go to that tavern. I'd walk in, and they go, "Hey, Tom," you know, like they used to go with Norm on Cheers.
Yeah, you could walk home,
and I could stumble home.
Route 1. What happened to Great Grandpa Gozy again? I don't remember.
Yeah,
Great
Grandpa Gozy got run over drunk on Route 1. Oh my God! That's right. It was Route 1.
He was on the highway.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, he was on the highway. It was.
Was it Route 1? I thought it was like some major.
No, it was Route 1.
Expressway.
It was Route 1. Not. It was in New Jersey. My grandfather, who was alcoholic, I'm sorry to say.
He was an immigrant. He was Hungarian.
He was Hungarian.
It was a different time.
But and I found a newspaper article online. It was very horrible for the family.
It was graphic.
It was too graphic and very sad. But yes, Route 1. I guess I'm not doing that one, Pete.
Yeah, so maybe you shouldn't.
Although, you know, then you would have full reign of the whole operation.
I would shut it down so quick. The doors, we'd have a big sale. You come get all these drill bits and saw blades that he got from Matthew at half the price.
Don't forget the photovoltaic panels in the... did you see the... somebody asked about those this morning, too. So
I didn't know that.
Okay. So, all right. Yeah. All right. Well, I would... Here's what I would like to have you do.
Okay,
it's 9:45.
We'll see how I feel about it.
Sell something, will you?
No, I got a book.
Okay. All right, I'll see you in a little while, Pete.
What are you trying to get? How come you're always trying to get me off the phone? How come?
Well, because you're a threat to my radio operation here. I don't know. We can sit here and talk. I don't have any other calls right now. I got a couple of questions.
Honestly, I don't have a whole. What are your questions?
Let's see. All right, the next question is how much can you expect to spend on a heat pump system for a 1,200 square foot home?
I'm going to say if you're doing mini splits, $2,500 installed.
Well, it depends on the heat load, but I'll say in the $3,000 range. You might get a deal and get it for $2,500, which would be nice, especially up here in this part of Maine.
Yeah,
the Bangor area. Okay, we got another.
Invest in insulation before you invest in a heating system. And I say that as someone who does not currently sell insulation.
Okay.
Invest in insulation first.
So I've gotten two emails from Nat this morning. First one is, have you found your sign? Did you know where he put the sign? Did you see it?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the other one is, what's the BTU content, per pound BTU content of a banjo?
Let's go over there on Sunday and screw the sign to his building.
Well, I was going to do that, but that's too easy. That's too simple. Nat has laid down the gauntlet, and something's going to happen there, buddy.
Let's have somebody paint a mural on his building. Like those Stalinist murals.
I don't think he's shy about reciprocating by painting a mural on my building, so I'm not sure we want to go there. Pete, let's see. We've got a phone call. Let's see if we can do this on line one and line two. Okay,
I'll stay quiet.
Keep you well. You can stay on, but I'm gonna let's get line two going. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi. Speaking of mini splits, I saw a video on a self insulation for and they're running really affordably.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any experience with these things?
I have not put a mini split in myself. The catch with a mini split and putting it in yourself, it's really not that hard to put in. Obviously you need to know how to do wiring because it they do draw some power. But it has more to do with installing the line set properly. And my suggestion for most folks who want to do it themselves, even if it's a sealed line set that's pre-charged, is get a you can mount the inside unit, mount the outside unit, run the lines, but not hook them up, the refrigerant lines, and then have a refrigerant contractor come in, pay them $100-$200 to do that final hookup, and you know you're leak free because I have seen people who quote unquote have learned how to do this, mm-hmm. who are contractors, mess it up, and Pete's laughing because he knows who I'm talking about.
Yep.
And I'm not going to name any names, no. But and I've seen them go back multiple times to installations for contractors who thought they knew what they were doing. So it's you know, if you've ever done gas lines with swedge fittings, you kind of you're dealing with that, except you're dealing with very high pressures for refrigerant. So it may work for a while and then leak, and then you've got to pay to get it recharged. You got to pay to get it leak tested, then recharged, and so it's a cheap date in that way. So, but it can be done yourself, and it's kind of like the photovoltaics too. Physically mounting the collectors is the lion's share of the work. The rest of it is just plug in stuff. So it's very simple, but the if you're doing photovoltaic system, you really have to have a licensed electrician at some point in the equation, whether they're just there to overlook what you've done or they're there to do the actual plug and play. Let's go over to line one again, Pete.
Okay.
Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I got a question about 12-volt batteries in a car. A tractor, actually. I've got an old tractor that runs 212 volts. And I've got one that is, this morning, it's 11.2 on my tester, and the other one is 12.3, and it will not turn the tractor over.
Yeah. I would pull the two. They're both in parallel, I assume?
Yes.
Yeah, I would pull both batteries off the tractor and charge them one at a time, see if you can get them back up to something around. They should be over 12.5. And I think the lower one is probably the problem one.
Yep. I've had that on a battery tender all winter, or all summer, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And my battery charger refuses to charge it anymore.
Yeah. I think it's time.
Yep.
It's time to call it.
Yeah. Sorry.
All right.
Okay. Good luck. Okay. Bye-bye. Yeah, so, yeah.
Does anybody have any questions about Star Wars or anything? I mean, it's just batteries and mini splits. How about something in my wheelhouse? You know, actually, what the other gentleman was asking about the mini split installations, you were saying it's good to have an actual installer come out and just, you know, double check all the refrigeration charge and all that.
Hmm.
I do have a contractor in mind that I would recommend for that if you needed to have that done. And it is whatever mini split heat pump installer needs to buy an ambulance. And that's the one that I recommend. Anybody who needs a nice service truck, I'm happy to see a little bit of nepotism and recommend you.
Okay,
and
Pete.
I smell really nice.
He's a sweet smelling boy. Let's go over to line one again. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine. Say hi to Pete.
Yeah, good morning. Good
morning.
Hey,
good morning.
I was looking at an advertisement for a battery tender, but it also said a desulfator.
Yes.
So I don't know if there's anything to that or not.
Yes, there is. A desulfator, the problem is if you leave a battery on what might be considered a battery tender, it'll maintain the charge to a certain point, but the battery can tend to build up sulfation in between the plates, and a desulfator keeps that from happening. So I have a desulfation charger that I use that many times will work on cars. You know, we get in cars that have sat and the batteries go flat, and I many times can desulfate them and bring them back. Not always, but if you have a tender that has a desulfator built in, you're much more likely to have the battery survive just sitting there not doing anything.
And if you've ever gotten into a car and it needs a jump, and then you start it and it starts fine for the rest of the day, then the next day it's completely flat again and the battery's sulfated.
Yeah,
like a magic rock garden in there.
Oh, and we had a
hang
call
up on me.
No, we had a call there, but it's kind of gone. So
yeah, okay, no, all right, fine. Hang up.
Well, Pete, look, I guess I'll let you go because we're almost out of time anyway, and I'll see you in a little while.
All right, I'll stay here, I guess.
Okay. What is the? I'm not even going to ask what kind of cologne it is.
It's Hugo Boss Element.
Okay.
I'm a little ashamed because Hugo Boss sounds kind of, you know, like what's wrong with you, dude? But it does smell really good, and it's called Element, and I drive a Honda Element.
Oh,
that sold me on it.
Okay. Well, that would clinch it. Yeah. I could see that happening.
I think so. If you can find a cologne named after after what kind of car you drive, that's really the one you want to buy.
I haven't seen any Prius Prius cologne.
I think it mostly just smell like patchouli, wouldn't it?
All right. Be careful now. Okay.
Patchouli and marijuana.
Oh, no, that wasn't nice.
All right.
Okay. Pete, apologize for that. That was a joke.
I apologize. Okay. I'm just kidding. We're all friends. Come on by. We'll take a picture.
Okay. See you later.
All right.
Bye-bye. That's my boy. Now, I just want to explain that that is my son, truly, because he can put his foot in his mouth as well as I can. That was a joke I wouldn't have made, and I drive a Prius, and I have neither of those things that I do. So, anyway, if you have a chance today and you're out, go visit my friend Matthew, and those of you who are going, tell him that Tom, you heard about it from me. I have no vested interest. I'm not getting a kickback. I just would like my friend to know that I've been trying to help him, and it's worth the trip. It really is, and I may break out over there just because, you know, I could probably use more drill bits. All right, I'm going to go. I'll see you next week. Same time, same place. Have a good weekend. Enjoy the weather.